Welcome to Fat Chicks on Top. This podcast contains frank discussions about the body, sexuality, and occasionally uses swear words, which may not be appropriate for people under the age of 18. This podcast also uses facts, statistics, and mathematics, which may not be appropriate for liberal arts majors. And this podcast relies on science and reality, which may not be appropriate for evangelicals. Welcome to Fat Chicks on Top. You are here with your host, Auntie Vice, and it's great to be here. We're in April and spring. Things are flourishing. And I am so excited today. I have followed this writer for several years and really gotten into her work. She's written several books on aging and sexuality, sex after grief. She is a phenomenal advice columnist, for lack of a better term at this point, and just a wealth of knowledge around sex and sexuality. I'd like to welcome Joan Price to the show.
Thank you so much. What a wonderful place to be today.
I came to your work looking for more information around aging and sexuality, partly because we either age or die, so we're all going to get older and keep having sex.
You're taking my line away from me. I say the only way to avoid aging is to die young, and who wants that?
Exactly. So when did you start thinking about aging and sexuality? Because this is not something that a lot of 20-year-olds are like, yes, I can't wait to be over 60 or 70 and talking about sex.
Well, thinking about it, I'd say around menopause, I was around 48 or so. Writing about it, age 61, was when I started this career. And I'm 80 now, so I'm in my 20th year of educating about older age sexuality, or as I put it, I talk out loud about senior sex. When I was going through menopause and after that, I discovered that women became invisible. Oh my gosh, this was, I hadn't been prepared for that. I was single, and I was very interested in dating and meeting new people and having flings. And whereas earlier, it seemed like this was easy. You put yourself out there and it happens. And then suddenly I found that the men I wanted to attract were just looking over my head, looking for younger, fertile women. Not that they wanted to impregnate anyone, but there was something hardwired about looking for that. And I know it's easy to look over my head because I'm only 4'10", but that's not the reason they were doing it. They were just invisibility. And I didn't know that this would lead me closer to a career until at age 57, I had the absolute marvelous fortune of falling in love with a man who would be the love of my life, who was 7 years older. And now here we were, 57 and 64, having amazing sex as well as an absolutely beautiful relationship in all ways. And after, a couple of years of this, I said to Robert, where are the books about this kind of thing? Why is it a secret that getting older isn't the end of anything? In fact, it's many new beginnings. And in many ways, it felt like the best sex of our lives. And he said, well, you're the writer. You write the book. And I said, all right, I will. And I thought it would be a one book thing. And then I would go back to my other career, which was writing about health and fitness. I was a fitness leader and a writer about health and fitness. That was my second career. I was a high school English teacher for 22 years before that. But what I didn't realize was how much people were hungry for information. No one talked about it. It was a taboo topic at that time. And in fact, when my first senior sex book came out, Better Than I Ever Expected, Straight Talk About Sex After 60, the first review it got started with, "Now that boomers have discovered their sex after 60, could they please stop writing about it?" That's a long answer to your question.
Well, and yours at the time when it came out was literally like maybe one of 5 or 7 books about sex after 60 that wasn't aimed at either hip replacement and sex or, menopause and sex, right? And so
it was one of three. There was The Round-Heeled Woman. There was, I can't even think of what the other one was now, but it was, there was really no book that said, "Hey, this is our experience," because I had solicited what I called sexually seasoned women to also contribute their experiences. And so this book was really a joyful celebration of what older age sexuality could be. And it was the only one of its type that also included some self-help, not just memoir.
Which, but the idea that there's now just this abundance of boomers talking about sexuality. Let's back up a little bit, and because I get this question from quite a few folks who either write into the show or who come to my classes and stuff, how does menopause change sex?
Big time. And it's not just menopause, but it's also the years accruing after that. So it starts at menopause, but this is pre-menopause and this is post-menopause and that's it. No, but starting at menopause, because of the hormonal changes, our vaginas feel drier because we're not lubricating naturally as much or at all, eventually at all. And easy, that's why lubricants were created. They're wonderful lubricants out. And including a line that's just for older women, the Wicked Sensual Care Simply Timeless line, so good. We also find that it takes us longer to reach orgasm, and that maybe we don't reach it the way we did before. We have to figure out new ways that work for us, because as I call it, the umbrella term is the old ways don't work the way they used to anymore. We also may have our vaginas may not be as welcoming to penetrative sex as they were before. Maybe it was our favorite thing, maybe it wasn't our favorite thing in the past, but it was generally comfortable, and it may be decreasingly comfortable. And that, and we also thought if we were, and I'm not assuming we were, but if we were in a heterosexual relationship, we came to sex assuming that PIV, penis and vagina sex, was the goal, the go-to, the way you're supposed to do it. And the older we get, the more that recedes as the favorite thing, and other things grow as the favorite thing. It may be oral's our favorite. It may be manual is our favorite. It's likely to be sex toys are our favorite. Because, and that's the other thing that changes, is that we need more sensation in order to reach orgasm. I'm sorry, that's not supposed to be ringing. We need more sensation to get aroused and to reach orgasm. We also don't feel spontaneous desire in the way we used to. And that blindsides people. I hear frequently, "Oh my God, I never have desire for sex anymore." And what's going on for them, and I'm sure you've talked about this in the past, is the difference between spontaneous desire and responsive desire. What they're really saying is they do not experience the hormonally driven spontaneous desire. But once they can access their pleasure, their physiological and emotional pleasure with sexual activity, whatever form that might be for them, then they can find that they can access the wonderful responsive desire, which is desire in response to pleasure.
And that has come up a lot, both for people who are in perimenopause and postmenopausal and all of that, but also for a lot of my guests who are in long-term relationships, mm-hmm. right? That you know, spontaneous desire kind of recedes, and people think that means they no longer have sexual desire, but that's not true at all.
Exactly right. They should all read Emily Nagoski's book, Come As You Are. That's the best book that I know that explains it, and in such a fun way to read it. She has a knack for engaging her readers in with her quirky ways of explaining things that are just so absolutely perfect. You know, she has a new book now, Come Together for Couples.
I've reached out to her publicist. I'm trying to get her on the show because I love her writing too.
Yeah. Yeah. She's, I know, doing a lot of events right now, and it may take a while to get her attention. But
yes. So you talk about going back out on the dating scene in your 50s. I did it in my late 30s and early 40s, and it was intimidating. Now, what did you notice had changed? Because it had been a while since you'd been on the dating scene.
Well, yeah. I mean, there was a time in my, I was single a large part of my life. But then once I met Robert, the person who started this career for me, I was so madly in love with him. And we were together for 7 years. And then I lost him to cancer. And for a long time, I had no wish to date because I was still in love with my dead husband. And there was just nothing more to be said about that. But I knew, and I felt I was a sexual being. I did want to come back into my body, which had been numbed by the experience of grief. And I'm sure anyone who's been through grief knows, got it, numb, got it. And even though I was by then a sex educator, I was having the most problems getting back into sex, either with myself or let alone with a partner, because I just, you know, I said to my grief counselor at that time, I just can't even seem to want to pleasure myself, and it probably wouldn't work anyway. And she said, if you have a vibrator, it'll work. Well, I knew that, and I just somehow, my own life and what I knew were not in cahoots. So she was right. And then once I started nurturing myself in that very pleasurable way, then I could think about, well, is there a kind of relationship that I could get into now? I don't want to get married again. I don't want another committed relationship at this time. I'm still in love with Robert, and I have no wish to get over that, in quotes, whatever that means. I just need to get to my next stage of engaging with the world, and that means engaging with my sexual being and finding the touch of someone that I want to touch me. So, yeah, starting to date again at that point, besides being older, this was 2008 when he died, and it was several years before I was trying again to meet people. And it was really hard. Sometimes I would go on a date, and then I would just cry on the way home thinking, this isn't worth it. And I have to convince myself, no, you know better than that. You know that it's going to take some some frogs before you meet a prince. But I then came to this, and I developed a workshop during that time called How the Heck Do I Date at This Age? Because, as you know, we teach what we need to learn. So I thought, I need to learn this, so I'm going to learn it and teach it. And I did. And one of the things that I came up with is the worst first dates are the best stories. So anytime there was either a terrible person or just a truly boring date or someone saying something, I can't believe you said that to me, then I just chalk that under, oh, good, a good story for the next time I give the workshop. And that became a thing that we would go around the room and give our first date stories. I heard some doozies, I'll tell you that.
Well, we had a guest on the show last season, Demi Wild, and his whole podcast is hookup horror stories. And they're about a horrible date. Like, there is just a treasure trove of bad dating stories, and I love them.
Oh, I want to know how to see that or hear that. Oh, yes.
Yes, and I'll send you the link, and listeners, I'll put the link back in. But yeah, I mean, bad date stories are so good to retell.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the ones people told me were just so hilarious. There was one, if I can tell a short one here.
Please do.
One woman who told me that she had a first date with someone who went on and on and on about his health problems, this medical appointment, that medical appointment, his heart, his high blood pressure, his this, his that. And she's just thinking, when is this date going to end? And then finally he said, oh, what's the matter with me? I've been talking this whole time. What about you? What are your health issues? And then I had someone, this was a man who was, I don't remember, maybe in his 60s or 70s. And this cute young thing reached out to him and wanted to see him. And he thought, oh, I don't know. I better be careful. She wants my money, or what does she want from me? And she was coming on to him really hard and fast and said, this was online and or on the phone or something. And then she said, well, why don't you come to my house for our first date? And he goes, okay. And so he arrives. She takes him by the hand and she says, come with me. And she leads him up a flight of stairs into a bedroom. And he's going, what? Am I dreaming? What's going on here? He's on to trot. And then she says, under the bed, there's a rat trap. I need you to pull it out and dispose of the rat.
Oh, my God. That's horrible.
It's what she wanted from him. Could you believe it? So anyway, I heard all sorts of things. It was the most fun. But the moral of the story is, don't give up on dating. Just make your way through the bad ones or the indifferent ones and save those great stories for the rest of us.
Those are fantastic. You talk about being numb and your body goes numb in grief. And for people who haven't lost somebody very close to them, I'm not sure you really get the depth of that loss. But I'm surrounded by a lot of people who have been widowed in the last decade or so. And it really is. So other than nurturing that reconnection through masturbation, how do you start to come back into your body? Because this is not a fast process.
No. And you need to give yourself time. And I have to put in a plug for my book, Sex After Grief, Navigating Your Sexuality After Losing Your Beloved. It took me until 2019 to write that book. So 11 years after Robert died before I could write that book. And it meant getting into a really dark place, reading old journals, and just getting back into what it felt like at that time in order to write it. But it was important. It was important to share my experience and the experiences of others. I had a whole bunch of other people who sent me their experiences because we all grieve differently. And I wanted this to be a self-help book. And it actually has an action plan after every chapter. But one of the things I advocate for is, and I think this is really important, is that when you think you're maybe kind of sort of ready for sex with another person, don't think of it as all or nothing. Don't think, well, I'm either going to have sex with this person or I'm not. Instead, how about thinking of it as getting sexual in stages? Feel what it's like to hold someone and kiss someone, nuzzle someone without any expectation from either of you that it's going to go farther than that at first. So in other words, we're giving consent to ourselves and a partner for just a step at a time. And it's important to explain that. It's important to say, I'm feeling very vulnerable. I'm attracted to you. I'd really like to explore with you. But please understand that I need you to be, I just need you to accept that we'll only go in stages. And I will be in charge of those stages. And if this isn't something you want to accept, I get it. But we are not a match at this time. So you don't ever feel pressured, and you find someone who's really kind and understanding, who's going to, I don't know about guide you is right, because you're partnering with this in this process, but is able to support you and understand your vulnerability and just back it up. Just whatever happens by what you want is going to be all there is today. And if it works well, I'm going to want another date.
When you go back out on the dating scene, right, there's a lot of conversation, and I've seen it on TikTok and Instagram, of people in their 20s and 30s going, you know, well, we have a lot more sex than people who are in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, I always have to laugh, right?
I'm laughing now.
Yeah, because my generation, your generation, we're the ones who pioneered kind of the sexual freedom push and move. Like the 60s were the decade of free love, right?
The sexual revolution. We were the foot soldiers. A lot of their sexual freedom, the younger people's sexual freedom, was because of what we did. I mean, I sometimes say to young people whom I call seniors in training, I've been your age. You've not been mine. So learn from me. Be open to my experiences and what a wisdom I might have acquired along the way. Yeah. And besides, we also know at our age, and I'm sure you know, though I can tell you're younger than I am, that it isn't about quantity. It's about quality. It's about, as Emily Nagoski, to quote her again, says, how much do you like the sex you're having? That's the important part, not how much are you having. How much do you like the sex you're having?
Well, not only how much do you like it, but how you understand it, right? Because how you understood sex in your 20s is obviously different than now. I know at 50, my understanding of what it was 30 years ago is different. So for you, how has your understanding of sex itself changed through the decades?
Oh, woo, how long have you got? Well, oh my gosh, so many things. One really important part is that the key is to communication. The key is to being able to, and for my generation, it was a lot of overcoming our upbringing to get here. Not so much with yours and younger, but for us, we were just told that sex is wrong and bad until you get married, then it's wonderful and you'll have orgasms through PIV with your husband, even though we've been telling you to fear sex and to hate everything about it. We did not know how to, or even that we should be able to ask for what we want. And this is something that most of my generation does not know how to do. And I'm teaching it over and over and over again. I had to learn it for myself. And that is, as Dan Savage says, use your words. In fact, he says that in gay land, deciding to have sex is only the beginning of the conversation. In straight land, deciding to have sex goes to the default PIV setting with no further negotiation. And he says if people in straight land could learn how to do it like people in gay land, they'd have a lot more sex. And he's absolutely right. So from my vantage point of 80 and having finally learned to do this successfully, we need to be able to, in a loving and non-shaming way, explain what we need. And starting with the words, "This is how my body works," I found is a really good way to just go, no, it's not anything you're doing wrong, but here's what I need. This is how my body works, and this is what I need to reach orgasm. If we can explain that to someone, the barriers break down. But so often, people are so afraid to do that. And I would say, although it often seems gendered that I have vulva owners who say that to me, there are also penis owners who whisper to me in the back of the room or email me and say, I need a lot more stimulation than I used to. And my partners seem to think it's just enough to get naked and everything's going to just rise to attention and stay that way. And it doesn't work that way for me anymore. And how do I ask for what I need? Well, the same way. This is how my body works. This is what I need for stimulation. Let me show you. And if someone is not going to back up and say, "Oh, I'd love to learn that with you," if you don't get that response, well, kick the person out of bed. What do you want to spend any more naked time with that person for?
And speaking of being naked, one thing that a lot of people get wary of as they get older or how they look when they're naked. One of my favorite moments in Bob's Burgers is when they discover there's a nude beach in town and Linda says, "Let's go." And Bob says, "I don't want to." And Linda says, "Well, but they're all going to be people our age." And he's like, "That's by fear, as I'm going to see all these old saggy people and realize I fit in."
I was hoping you'd ask that question, and I knew you would because I know the theme of the show. This is a huge, huge, huge barrier. We are fed society's messages, advertising's messages, the media's messages, that the only desirable bodies are young, slim, and firm, and proportioned according to the proportion of the era. In Marilyn Monroe's time, it was very different from Twiggy's time and so on. And most people won't even know my references, but that
we'll put links so they know.
Who know? You know Marilyn Monroe, do you know Twiggy?
I know Twiggy.
Okay. We don't have the role models, we don't have the affirmations for acknowledging that older bodies age beautifully too. I have a thing I do. I know we're not on video, and you probably, you personally can see. I have wrinkles in my arm that change patterns when I move my arm. I find this endlessly fascinating. I've taught my lover to find it endlessly fascinating, too. My lover tells me my body is so beautiful, irresistibly beautiful, instant turn on beautiful. Well, I'm 80 years old. That he finds it that isn't so much saying what my body is like. It's saying how he is able to appreciate, desire, and love an aging body. That's all to his credit. We need to open up to that. For the people who are saying, and there's so much of the population, "Oh, I'd never want to be with someone who's saggy and baggy and the breasts haven't defied gravity for decades and wrinkles everywhere." Well, that's too bad. I don't have sex with you. Maybe someone will, but I sure don't. And you're missing a lot by that. You're also missing your own self-love. How are you going to tolerate your own aging body? What are you going to do about your own sags and bags and things going south? You're going to have as many things going south, more things going south than I do. So, it's just a matter of at one point saying, where did I get that idea that older bodies aren't desirable? And I've unlearned a lot of the things that I was taught or that the media teaches us or tries to slam into our faces and other parts. I can let go of that too. I don't even remember what your question was anymore.
About being naked at our age.
Oh, naked at our age, like my shirt says and like my best known book says.
Yes. For you, what was the hardest part to accept about an aging body?
The hardest part. Oh, there's so much. The hardest part wasn't about what it looks like. I'm aware I don't look young anymore. But then when I was young, I didn't think my body looked right either. I don't know if any of us do. So, okay, if I've never thought it was the exact proper body, then why should it be now? But for me, it's the frustrating way that it breaks easily, that I lose my balance, that I have that I injure myself, that new medical conditions keep popping up. It's that part of the aging body. It's wait, I'm doing everything I can. I exercise for you. I eat right for you. I do whatever I can do for you other than sleep a lot, but that's your fault, not mine, I say to my body. I don't know how to do anything better lifestyle-wise, but even that's not enough at a certain point. And that's the frustrating part, not how it looks. I at first was upset at having my arousal be so problematic. But then I thought, you know, just bring on the sex toys, get stronger and stronger sex toys, teach a partner why we need to incorporate those in our sex play together. Okay, done, fine. That's not a problem anymore. So accepting our bodies, yes. The only fear I have is just that my body is going to decide to break down more and betray me in ways that I can't anticipate or that I can't prevent.
And they all do eventually, right? It happens to the best of us.
At 80, I've already outlived most people.
One thing that happens as you age too, and you talk about the hormone changes that people with uteruses go through, through perimenopause and menopause, but men go through hormone changes as well. And it often creates a different phase of life for them where women tend to get more free and more open. Yes. It's one, I love it. I'm so looking forward to the 50s. Every decade has been better. And I've gotten rid of more and more societal expectations and realized those are bullshit. And so much more free. Men tend to become more nesting and more home focused. And that's part of the hormone shift too. So for folks who are dating somebody of the opposite gender, how do you work through those differences that are in some ways very biological?
You're right about everything you say. However, I don't take away that there are differences. What I take away is that we are actually more alike at this time of life than we ever were before, in that we all need extra stimulation. We all need a lot more warm up. We respond to cuddling and aftercare and laughing together and singing together and being silly together. We aren't so much the guy is ready to go while the woman isn't yet. We don't have that anymore because fortunately for us, the guys have slowed down too. And I think that's a wonderful thing. As long as they can accept that and celebrate that, I need a lot more touching now. I enjoy a lot more touching now. What's wrong with that? Nothing at all.
One of your more recent blog posts, too, has talked about finding the time of day that you are most around. The circadian rhythms. You have another one on, like, don't eat before sex, right? Because you got to get the blood going.
Exactly.
So for folks who aren't used to having to pay attention to those things because they've gone through their 30s and 40s and they're always like, I'm here and ready to go. How do you start shifting that focus to focus inward? Because that's an awkward shift for a lot of people.
I think it's a delightful shift, actually, because it means it isn't my fault what's going on here with my body. Oh, there are explanations. It's hormones. It's this. It's that. If we just say, okay, this is what's going on. We learn it what we can about it. So we go, oh, okay, not unusual. It's quite normal. Then what can we do about it? Oh, plenty. Plenty. And one of the things I teach people is that as we age, the blood flow to the genitals seems more sluggish. We don't have that rush to the genitals. And the way we can increase that is, as you said, eat afterwards, not before, because when you eat, the blood flow is going to the digestive system. And to have sex at your, what I call your tingle time. And what I mean by that, if I can explain that, is we all have this kind of rhythm of a certain time of day, and it's different for everyone, where we find the we feel the most sexually responsive, or we feel the most likely to be sexually responsive. That if we tune in on, would I like to have sex right now? Would I like to have sex right now? Would I like to have, there's some time of day where you feel, I think I'd be arousable right now. Maybe it's, and I suggest people track that time, and they will find that if they track it for 3, 4, 5 days in a row, it's the same time of day or within a certain range. And if they can then schedule sex, and I'm all for scheduling sex, during that tingle time, and then save their meal for afterwards, also exercise first, because that increases blood flow to all parts of the body, including the genitals. So those three things, the tingle time, the exercise first, and they eat afterwards, that they're going to be having better sex, because their bodies will be more likely to be aroused and to reach orgasm more easily.
You also talk about incorporating sex toys. And I love sex toys. Yeah, I review as many as I can get my hands on. For you, what are some, and they've come a long way. I mean, from what they were 20 years ago, even, we have beautiful options. What are some of your favorites to incorporate?
I have so many favorites. I will tell your listeners that I review sex toys from a senior perspective on my blog, joanprice.com/blog. And I've been doing that for, I don't know, maybe 15 years or so. I've lost track. Some of the older favorites, the Erosolator with the magic tip, the magic fingertip, the marshmallow thing, that is just a, it works every time. The magic wand, which was a favorite way back when I was half my age, is still a favorite, but it's come a long way. It's now the magic wand rechargeable with silicone head, and the rechargeable instead of having to be plugged in is absolutely wonderful. Although I hate the name, I love the womanizer. They are just great toys for clitoral stimulation. They are the kind, they don't actually suck, but they, because of the so-called pleasure air technology, it feels like gentle sucking from a skilled oral sex giver. I recently reviewed a new wonderful toy called the Pulse Queen from Hot Octopus. Have you tried that? It is.
I have not, but I like Hot Octopus.
And yeah. It is, oh, I love Hot Octopus. Well, this one is so rumbly, even at the highest speeds, which are more powerful than even I need, and I need powerful, it never gets buzzy. It stays rumbly. Oh, that makes me so happy. So those are a few of my favorites.
So, you know, it's important to find somebody who reviews sex toys from the perspective of where you're coming from, right? On mine, I do it from bigger bodied people and people with joint issues, you know, because of arthritis and stuff in my hands. You review it from somebody who's a bit older using the sex toys.
Yes.
For people who are shopping for them, and I know, like, for my mom, she never used them. And I moved in with her after my stepfather died. She knows what I do for a living. And eventually she asked, is there anything in there for an old lady? So I was able to kind of introduce her to those. But for people who may not have used sex toys in their younger years, how do you go about figuring out what's going to work for you?
I actually have a guide for that on my blog. It's Vibrators for First Timers. And I take you through a number of questions to ask yourself about what you need, because someone may not know the availability, the kinds of things that are possible. So where exactly do you want the stimulation, and what kind of stimulation do you want? And then are there other things? Do you need, for example, an ergonomic handle because you have arthritic wrists, which is not just about how to hold it, but also how much of the vibrations is transmitted down into the handle? That can just be a killer if you have arthritic wrists. And do you need it to be, if you want, for example, if you want a penetrative toy, do you want it to look like a penis? Do you want it not to look like a penis? Do you care? If a vibrating toy, do you care how noisy it is? I take people through a whole series of questions to try to pin down what they might like. And then when they read the reviews, they'll be more able to go, yeah, I think this one would work for me. If, of course, if people are within traveling distance to a feminist-friendly, progressive sex toy shop, and I'm thinking of some like Good Vibrations, like the Smitten Kitten, like a Pleasure Chest. I mean, there are so many around the country and around the world, but we're not all able to walk in there. If we can walk in there, it's wonderful. The toys are all on display. They're plugged in. You can pick them up. You can see what they're like. You can hear how noisy they are. Suggestion of a place, a way to feel what they would feel like on your genitals, since obviously you can't take them in the back room and take your clothes off and give it a whirl. But if you touch it to this, I know we're not on video, so I need to explain what I mean. There's an area on the inside of your wrist that is very sensitive. If you touch a vibrator there, it will give you a little bit of the sensation of what it would be like on a clitoris. That's just the beginning of my answer to that question, but I'll go on if you want.
We'll put a direct link so that people can find it, because it is, especially from folks who come to my class who are over 50, a lot of them have never bought sex toys before. And like, you know, even 20 years ago, you had a few dildos and the magic wand and a few other things. But now it's like Wile E. Coyote and Acme are out there designing some of these. It's an amazing array.
There's a wonderland, a fantasy land, deep, dark world, anything you could want.
and it makes it so fun, right? Because sex, you continue to change your relation.
It makes it fun. And I also, as long as we're talking about vibrators, mm-hmm. I want to emphasize, please purchase your vibrators from the sex toy store. That is the progressive and feminist-friendly store that cares about your sexual health as well as your sexual pleasure. It's going to make sure you're getting what you think you're getting. Do not buy your sex toys on Amazon. They can be knockoffs. And we use those sex toy stores for education. it's just unfair to then say, well, I'm going to take advantage of the information you give me, but then I'm going to spend my money somewhere else because I could save $2. Please don't do that. That's what puts these sex toy shops out of business.
Yes. And I can't remember if your site has a list of those toy stores. Do you?
I have some that are my affiliates and advertisers. But when I review a sex toy, I link to a vetted retailer where they can purchase it right away. So any review of mine will link to where they can buy it. And it's only companies that I know, that I vetted, that I have a relationship with, and that I know they support senior sex. They're not just, the website is not just full of 20-year-olds, but they also, they are reliable, they are high quality, and they stand behind their products.
And they sell what they say they're selling. Your point about the knockoff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazon drives me crazy with that because they literally will scrape pictures from other sites and then send you something that's not representative.
And then you're out the money and you don't have the toy anyway. So you do better just to go to a retailer that is honest and doing the work that we need done. They'll even test these toys. You know, they think, is this really silicone? Well, let's see. Let's put it in a jar for a few days and see if it melts and smells and excretes oil. I love that about these stores. You're not going to find that from an Amazon seller.
No. And anybody who's ever tried to buy something cheap off of Amazon, the same thing happens with sex toys. So please avoid that. You said you started this venture thinking it was going to be one book.
Yeah.
You are now, what, 4 or 5 in? You're several books in.
I've written 4, and I edited an erotica anthology written by and for people over 50, made a film, and it's a full-time career. This is what I do now. The reason that it wasn't just one book is that, as I said, Better Than I Ever Expected celebrated senior sex. But I kept hearing from people after that said, well, isn't that nice that you're having great sex and so are these sexually seasoned women, but I'm not, and here's why. And I realized, oh, there is a whole world of people who need the education that I need to find for them. I wasn't the person who knew all that stuff at the time, but I learned it and I met the people who were the experts in the field. And that's how Naked at Our Age came about. And I was very lucky and still am so in love with that book that it has won several awards. And
haven't talked a lot about that.
Oh.
You want to talk about that for a minute?
I'd love to talk about that. So what I did with Naked at Our Age is I asked people to send me their stories with their questions about sex. So in other words, I wanted their questions, but I wanted the background, the backstory of why they're asking that. And then I edited those stories. I got about 150 of them that I used for the book, many more that I didn't use. And I asked about 45 experts to address the challenges that were in their particular field. For example, experts on cancer and sexuality, experts on ED, experts on, you know, so many different areas, relationships, of course. So I had therapists, I had sex educators, I had doctors, I had many people with many different specialties. And I would present the question, the story, and the expert would answer it with my running commentary through the book. When I came up with that idea, I couldn't believe it had never been done. And I was freaked out thinking that someone else would do it before I got it done, because it seems so natural. Of course, you want that. what are the questions that we have at our age? And what is the story behind that so that it's interesting to read and we can say, oh, I identify with that too. And then who are the experts who can answer our questions? Ah, I was the first to do it. And I'm very, very proud of that book still.
What's next in the pipeline for you?
I am doing so many things right now. People say, what's the next book? No, I don't need a next book. I have the three I mentioned, plus The Ultimate Guide to Sex After 50, which was some years ago, but is still really up to date. What I'm doing now is doing more with virtual presentations, podcasts like yours, getting the word out there, making videos, making webinars, so that the information is available for people in the form that they want it, whether they want a quickie 2.5 minute video or do they want a 90 minute class? It's all available now. So I'm working on that, and I'm still writing my column for Senior Planet. I don't know if you know about that. I've been writing this monthly column for 10 years. It'll be 10 years in May. So one a month for 12 years is a lot of columns. And I love that because I always imagined I'd love to have a sex advice column, and I do now. So life is really full and rich, and I don't have more time to take on more things than I'm doing now. So I think if you just go to my website, joanprice.com, that's sort of a way to find all the things I'm doing, plus my newsletter. You can sign up for my newsletter, and then all the new things are sent out once a month. I love my work.
I'm so glad. What are you grateful for?
I am so grateful that people are trusting me with their sexual questions. I know that for people in my generation, that's very, very difficult to own the issues, to verbalize them, to trust someone else with them. I do consultations with people and come away feeling just so honored that I got to have that hour with them, and that I know that what I know then is something that is really helping them. I am very grateful that my mind and body are still working as well as they are at age 80, and that I can continue doing this work. I'm very grateful for my partner, who is such a support, a great support, personally and professionally and in all ways. And that's really wonderful and not something that I saw coming during the time that I was grieving. I'm very grateful for some of the funny things people say about me. I can laugh at myself. I don't mind.
I am very grateful for your work. It's actually been very helpful for me, and constantly referring to it when I do work, especially in my classes on sex and aging and sex and chronic illness. They're super helpful.
Thank you.
I'd encourage our listeners to check those out. So one more time, plug your site, plug where people can find your books, where you want them to go buy them, all of that good stuff.
JoanPrice.com. If you're in the United States, you can order directly from my website. Please do. And I will autograph them and send them out personally with my hot little hands. Everything you need to know is on that site, joanprice.com. You can find my newsletter, my blog, the webinars, everything. I love to give virtual presentations. So if you are aligned with an organization who would like to bring me in, I'm not traveling in person right now, just to protect my health, but I have a great setup for the virtual presentations and would love to do that, Joe. So just find the contact me part of my website and let's take it from there. And oh my gosh, thank you so much for this interview.
Thank you for being on the show. And listeners, we'll have all of those links and more in the show notes. Check those out. And as always, you know, like, subscribe, share, do all the things. Thank you for listening to this episode of Fat Chicks on Top. Please like, subscribe, and review our podcast on whatever platform you listen to it on. If we like your review, we may even read it online. This has been an Auntie Vice production. Producer and host, Rebecca Blanton. Audio production by Sharon Smith. Music by David Manga. And more music by Sharon Smith. For more information about Fat Chicks on Top, please visit our website for all things Fat Chicks at fatchicksontop.com.